Just think of all the credit card purchases that you've made in the past week or so, or the web pages that you've clicked through, or the cell phone calls that you've made, or even the TV shows that you've watched. And then think about how someone could learn something about you looking over all of this personal data. Someone is, the numerati, are watching you. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 16th. And we will talk about who is looking through all of this data this hour. They are the numerati. And we'll find out why. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And we will find out why our guest says that this mathematical modeling of humanity is changing our lives. Stephen Baker has written for Business Week for over 20 years. His work has appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the Los Angeles Times, and the Boston Globe. He is co-author of blogspotting.net, featured by the New York Times as one of the 50 blogs to watch, and thenumerati.net. He is also author of the new book, The Numerati. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And you also attended UW-Madison and have a son going to school here now working for the Badger Herald.
That is right. He works on the op-ed page, the editorial page of the Badger Herald. And he lives a couple blocks from Vilas Hall, where I think you're speaking to me.
That's
from.
That's exactly right. Well, welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio.
Thank you.
So tell me, who exactly are the numerati?
Well, they're very good in computer science and mathematics, and they're the only ones who can dig into these mountains of data that you and I and just about everybody else is adding to with our day-to-day lives, with all the data that's flowing out of the credit cards and our web searches and all the rest. It's just a big mountain of data. And the numerati are the people that can go in there that have the tools to find us in those mountains of data and describe us as voters, shoppers, potential terrorists, patients. And then they can predict and try to change our behavior.
So why do they want this information?
Because big businesses are thriving on the information. I mean, Google is the most notable example. They search through the data, and they find us through our queries and line us up with advertisements that they think we're interested in. That's a very primitive form of what we're looking at here. But if they can understand us, if the grocery market can understand what we want to buy, they can line us up with the food that they, you know, that we're more likely to buy and pay money for, and they can make more money. It's mm-hmm. all about customized service.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that doesn't sound so bad that they might give me a coupon for something I might want to buy anyway, and that's a deal.
Yeah, there are some benefits to this. It's not all scary.
But some of it is. Some of it is, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you afraid of the numerati?
I am afraid of them, or what they do, I should say. They're just you know, normal people. But I'm afraid of what they can do when they're looking for terrorists, and when they're combing the data of the entire world, looking at our patterns and trying to find patterns of people who might be trying to do us harm.
Yeah, why does that scare you?
Because if you look at the grocery store, the people in the supermarkets really have a lot of data about who buys Cheerios. And if they figure out that you buy Cheerios or that I do, it's not a big deal. And if they get it wrong and we don't buy Cheerios, but they give us a Cheerio advertisement, not a big deal either. But the people that are trying to understand the movements of terrorists and decipher their data have very little data about the day-to-day lives of terrorists or potential terrorists. They don't understand it. And so what I'm worried about is that they will go through all of our data, all of our phone calls, everything they can get their hands on, and look for patterns that suggest to them the possibility of somebody being a terrorist. And as they go through that data, maybe they find that someone doesn't really look like a terrorist, but looks like a bank robber or a pedophile or something like that. Are they going to hold off the hunt when they see that someone is perhaps tilting towards that type of activity? It leads to a surveillance society.
Yeah. You talked about an example of the potential of rights being violated if the numerati decide Joe Blow might be a possible pedophile, and Joe Blow, you know, is teaching at the local school. What happens?
Right. I mean, all of this work is being done on statistical analysis, and probability. And so the probability is that you are a Cheerios or a Wheat Chex eater, and that's fine. But if the probability is something about a disease you might have or that you might be a criminal, then it gets much more serious.
Yeah. Tell us why you decided to do your own study of the numerati.
Well, I was really fascinated by the subject. I went to IBM Research, and I talked to a mathematician there who told me that they were trying to build predictive mathematical models of 50,000 of his colleagues. And they were going to comb through their data and try to figure out what types of workers they are and where they would fit best. And I thought, if IBM can do this to its workers, then people in every industry can look at our data and try to figure us out in all the walks of our lives. And I thought it was a really big change for the way humans run humanity, mm-hmm. basically. Because to date, there have been big fields of our economy where those of us who understand humans do just fine. And the scientists, the mathematicians, and the engineers really haven't been able to play much in those fields of psychology and advertising and law and journalism because they couldn't figure out all the eccentricities and weirdness of a human being. But now they can start to do that. And so I wanted to go and find out how they're doing that, and I wanted to write it in a book that everybody could read, i.e. without any math in it.
Well, that's right. I have to admit, when I first saw the title, and my producer was saying, well, it's about this data mining and the mathematical modeling of humanity, I thought, oh my goodness. But it's fascinating. And tell us why this is modeling of humanity, though. I mean, these scientists and mathematicians are studying this data and figuring out how many times we buy Cheerios, but how does it model humanity and how can it change our lives?
Okay, I think first we should just discuss what a mathematical model is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time, mathematicians and engineers have been breaking down things like machines and interpreting them mathematically. And they say, okay, it behaves, it falls at this rate, the metal has this type of durability, it bends like this, and then they can get things like an atomic bomb or the wing of an airplane or even the behavior of a swarm of bees interpreted mathematically, and they can fool around with it that way and do simulations. And it's a lot cheaper and more efficient than blowing up atomic bombs and letting loose a swarm of bees. And they haven't been able to do it to humans, but now we're producing all of this data, and they can start to build predictive models of us. And then they can say, I have at the supermarket this many people, and you and I are all in these groups of people who behave like this, and we can estimate that they would like this product, or they will spend this many dollars per month. And as they get more data, they can make it more and more refined and get closer and closer to us. Right now, truth be told, most of us exist in these models as stick figures. But this is something that's going to happen for the coming century. And these stick figures that we now that depict us now are going to get more and more flesh and bones on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to start looking more like us and behaving more like individuals rather than types of individuals. You know, because if you think about it, for the past century, we've been looked at by politicians and marketers as huge groups of whites or blacks, rich or poor, this area code, that area code, this state or that state. And they've tried to say, okay, everybody in this area acts more or less like that. And it's not true. And so the numerati are trying to find us as individuals.
And maybe they'll eventually get the kinks out. You say that they can make mistakes, and in fact, made a mistake when you did an experiment on a dating website with your wife.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the ultimate challenge for the numerati, is to try to figure out who our ideal partner would be, and to analyze the data and see who we're compatible with. And I think it's a real stretch goal for them, frankly. And so I put it at the last chapter of the book, and my wife and I both signed up for chemistry.com, which prides itself on having very sophisticated algorithms to find the perfect mate for you. So we both signed up, and we wanted to see if the system would line us up with each other. And the results came back, and we weren't there. We weren't on each other's profile. We weren't, you know, supplied to each other.
Bummer.
Yeah, it was a real bummer. I was beginning to question the very basis of our 20-year marriage. And then they were lining up my wife with this guy who lives on the far side of Kennedy Airport. We live in the New Jersey suburbs. The drive from our house to Kennedy Airport is an hour and a half in good traffic.
That had to make you feel good.
Yeah, and they were ignoring me, and I live in the same town with her. So then I looked, and I found that there was one piece of data that I had erroneously given them, and that was separating me from my wife. And when I fixed the error, voila, we were matched again.
And they lived happily ever after.
Right.
Stephen Baker is our guest. We are talking about his book, The Numerati, finding out who the Numerati are and what they're looking for and how they may change our lives. Welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The Numerati are going over all of the personal data that we produce every single day of our lives by clicking along the internet, by flipping through TV channels, by using a credit card. Some of what the Numerati are doing, surprising, some of it unsettling, and we're talking about it all. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Well, someone is watching you. The Numerati are watching you, and we are talking about why and what is happening with this information that we produce every day. Stephen Baker, our guest. Stephen Baker has written for Business Week for more than 20 years, and he has a new book out, The Numerati. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anyone, anywhere, if you have a question, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dan in Madison joins us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Used to be, I don't know, say 7,500 years ago, a fair share of Americans lived in pretty small towns or rural areas where everybody knew everybody. Everybody had information about everybody. And, it was just harder to get away with anything because people didn't move. People were going to know you for most of your life. And everybody knew everybody else in the town. And I'm wondering if this is, in some ways, this data analysis trend substitutes for the intimacy and the longevity that we used to have in smaller towns.
Hmm. I think you're right on it there. I mean, I don't know if it's intimacy, but it's certainly knowledge. If in the old towns, the grocer used to know what you bought. And then we went into supermarkets, and they lost sight of us for a couple decades. But now the electronics is replacing the grocer's knowledge. And the same thing is happening with medicine and in other areas. And another point I would make is that privacy is a relatively new idea that we have. And, the word doesn't even figure into the Constitution for that. I think it's for that reason. So we're going to have to reassess our privacy, but I think it's very valuable to remember that we didn't used to have much of it at all.
Yeah. We didn't, but do you think that this might cause some sort of backlash, that we're going to somehow try to protect this information more?
I think if you ask people about this, I talk to people about the book, and I hear again and again that they're really weirded out by it, or they think it's really scary. And they talk about privacy a lot, but if you ask people to choose between convenience, the convenience of going through an automatic toll booth or carrying around a cell phone that basically marks your path everywhere you go, the convenience and privacy, they go for convenience. And if you give people a choice between financial savings, say you save a few bucks by giving the grocer the details on everything you buy, most people go for the financial savings over privacy. So I think they care about privacy, but it tends to lose out.
Next, we go to Don in Madison. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Good morning. Does it do any good? You know, I resent people tracking my actions and knowing what I do and whatever. Does it do any good when I'm on the Internet to wipe out all my cookies at the end of each of my sessions and to clear my history and keep people from knowing what I do on the computer that way?
It does. If you think that, yes, it does protect you from people knowing about what you're doing. If you do wipe out your cookies, you also wipe out quite a bit of convenience. They forget the passwords that you might have entered, so you have to keep entering passwords. And any customization on the pages that bring information that would be of special interest to you, that's lost too. And so I think it's a bit of a trade-off. But yes, you can do that.
What is Google doing with the information or any search engine? If, you know, I'm typing in all these keywords to do research on my radio program, what is Google doing with this information of all these keywords that I'm searching for?
Well, they're trying to figure out what humanity's interested in, and they're looking at trends, and they're looking at. They can look at local trends, and they can say people in Wisconsin seem to be interested in this. And they're doing a lot of analysis on it, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure where it fits into their current business plan. I mean, eventually they want to process all of this data and really figure out what people are up to. And they've got real privacy problems here. I mean, a lot of us don't want Google to know everything that we're doing, and they don't want our names and identities associated with our searches. But if they give you free services, maybe we will be willing to give them more of our data and let them understand us as individual consumers.
They must really think I'm an oddball because I do so many different areas of searches. But right now they're just kind of collecting all this. And,
yeah, you know. And I don't think they're focusing on you as a person at this point, though I may be wrong.
What about like some place like, let's say, Amazon, book purchases that I might make through Amazon? I know that they must use this to say, hey, you know, we think you'd be interested in these other books, too, because you bought, you know, book X. You must also like book Y.
Right. I mean, what they can do is that for the first time in history, it's very easy to compare each one of us with 100 million others. You know, in the past, people could compare us to six friends they have or maybe 100 people that they know. But now you can compare us to 100 million others, and so what the Numerati can do is go into literally that many records and try to understand what is it that makes this person like that person. If this person likes the same kind of movie as that person, or lives in the same zip code, or has a dog, or has a lot of debt on his house, does that mean that he'll behave in the same way, or want the same things, or suffer from the same disease as that person? Almost all of their analysis goes into comparing us to everybody else and trying to figure out which pieces of data matter.
Yeah. Now, these are the private companies doing this research and keeping this data, or are they, I don't know, somehow giving this to Big Brother?
Well, I think the closest thing we have to Big Brother is the federal government. Mm-hmm. And the National Security Agency has been scooping up massive amounts of our data, our phone calls and our internet traffic, and there's been a lot of controversy about that. But they're the ones who are data mining looking for terrorists. And that is, I think, the closest we come to Big Brother, though, you know, Google certainly has potential to rival them in this area.
We're talking about The Numerati. That's the name of the new book by our guest, Stephen Baker. The Numerati are watching us, looking through all of this data that we create every single day when we're on the internet or making a telephone call or going to the grocery store and swiping one of those loyalty cards. Does this bother you that all this data is being collected and that all of these scientists are pouring through these numbers, trying to figure out how we live and trying to change our lives? 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. If you'd like to send an email, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Some of this is just companies trying to make more money by knowing, you know, trying to market to us in a better way, Stephen Baker. And maybe that doesn't bother us all that much. But the numerati are also in all sorts of other areas as well, not just marketing. Talk about some of the surprising ways the numerati are, you know, what kind of research they're doing.
Well, one of the areas that I found the most interesting is in a laboratory in Intel out in Oregon, where they're doing experiments. They're modeling the homes. I mean, they're wiring the homes of hundreds of elderly people, and they're installing all kinds of sensors in these homes. They're trying to measure the people's footsteps, the sound of their voice, the patterns that they make as they walk around the house on a daily basis or a weekly basis, how long it takes them to recognize a voice that they know on the telephone. They're trying to measure absolutely everything they can about these people's lives. And then they establish what they call a baseline, which is the average of what these people do. And then when the people change their behavior, if their voice softens, if they start doing different routines in the house, then that's a deviation. And that deviation alerts them just to a change that might signal the onset of some disease. It might be Parkinson's disease. It might be dementia. It might be that they're losing muscle mass and in risk of suffering a fall. And so this is an experiment, but what they want and what they think is going to happen is that those of us who are, let's say, baby boomers, are going to want to surround ourselves with electronics because it'll be a lot cheaper than nurses. And we will provide minute-by-minute data on what we're doing, and it will be analyzed by machines that are instructed by the numerati to basically watch over our lives.
It's funny, Stephen Baker, we're getting some people who are calling saying, spell that. What exactly is that word, the numerati? N-U-M-E-R-A-T-I. Did you make up that term, or where does that come from?
I made it up. I made it up because, you know, these people are immensely powerful, and yet there's no name for them. And the closest names for them are really derogatory. They're things like nerds, geeks, propeller heads. And yet these people, you know, I can make a claim that they're going to be running the world in a lot of important ways, at least.
You have a section here, Meet the Numerati, They've Already Met You. And these people have names, too. I mean, they're real people.
Oh, yeah. Like, and a lot of them, you might note, don't have classic American names.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that it just, as I was going on this tour, I went to Chicago to Accenture to see how they're modeling grocery shoppers, and I went to Portland for the medicine thing, and I went to Pittsburgh where they're doing all kinds of work looking at network behavior, and a whole lot of the people are foreign, and that's a little bit of a problem for Americans because it's a growing part of our economy, and yet we don't graduate enough mathematicians and engineers.
Yeah, well, one of them is Helen Fisher, Rutgers University anthropologist, who devised chemistry.com's matchmaking formula.
Yes.
And we did talk a little bit about that, and I thought this might happen, Stephen Baker. We have two emails that occurred since we talked about that just a few minutes ago from listeners saying, hey, wait a minute, what was that one piece of information that you changed that eventually had you matched up with your wife? I was going to leave that, you know, as a secret at the end of the book, but do you care divulging
that? I guess we can't tantalize people too much, so I'll tell you.
Okay.
I signed up for that. My wife and I signed up for that service, and my wife is a couple years older than I am, and I'm 52, or I was 50 when I did this research, or 51. And if you sign up for one of these dating services and say that you're open to having older women, if you're a man and you're in your 50s and you're open to older women, you get a whole lot of emails saying so-and-so is interested in you. And since we weren't focusing on it, I lowered the age just to just to kind of cut the spam. Mm. And by lowering the age, I disqualified my wife.
Ah, and you, I probably didn't even really think about that.
Because, no, I didn't.
Yeah. So there we go. It was just a matter of the age range that you used.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks to Ron in Duluth and Sandy in River Falls for following up on that.
Dan, I hope that could tantalize them into buying the book, but, you know, taking it out of the library.
There's lots of other information in the book. Dan in Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is just how much information do the Numerati get about phone calls? Because, like you said, with your cell phone, they can track your location. Do they actually get, like, content of the phone call? Because I had heard, and I'm not sure if this is an urban legend or not, but I had heard that if you drop certain keywords, like I had heard bomb President White House, would get your call flagged as a possible terrorist conversation. And I was just wondering if that's true or if that's an urban legend.
Well, all we know is that the National Security Agency has gotten a lot of this phone traffic, and they've gotten phone traffic not only in English but in other languages as well, and they are looking through that phone traffic for signs and patterns of terrorist activity. I don't think if you and I use those words, they're likely to find us in the vast ocean of words that exist in these databases. But there's no doubt that they are looking for certain patterns of words. Now, your phone company is not looking through your words, but your phone company is looking at your network behavior, and they can analyze who you call. And it's just so-and-so-and-so-and-so. It's not so-and-so with an address who makes this many dollars a year. They're not doing that kind of calculation. But they're looking at the network behavior, and they can figure out who is the most important person in your phone network, who is the leader of your phone network, the person that everybody calls. And once they figure that out, then they go to great lengths to keep that person from churning, from leaving the phone service, because they're worried that if a leader of a network leaves the service, then his or her friends will follow.
Thank you very much, Dan, for the call. And of course, I assume those text messages also stay put. I know they're, it's a terrible tragedy in California with the train crash, and that's what they're searching those records of different people's text messages to see if the engineer of that train was paying attention or text messaging at the time.
Right.
Yeah. Pat in Appleton is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have never signed up for any of the grocery store discount cards to the chagrin of my husband because I'm concerned that health insurance companies will start monitoring what you're eating and then or smoking and then changing your insurance rates based on your habits.
Could that happen, Stephen?
I wouldn't say that it couldn't happen. I'm not aware of that happening, but it's within the realm of possibility, I think.
Okay, well then I'll continue on my mission. Thank you.
I would do more research on it because I really don't have any information about that.
Right now,
they do. Yeah. I mean, there are cases where they've gone through Google search internet searches and found that people were looking for information about breast cancer, for example. 3 weeks before they went to the insurance company and they and they disqualified them for a pre-existing condition. There have been legal battles over that.
Wow. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Pat. I have to admit that I felt uneasy a few years ago when my favorite grocery store first started offering those savings cards or loyalty cards. And for whatever reason, I didn't want to get one at the time. And then I finally just said, well, what the heck, I can save money on my Cheerios, so I'll just do it, and I don't care if the store knows I buy Cheerios. But right now, the store is just using this information, right? Or are they sharing this with a whole bunch of other industries?
Right now, most of them are keeping it to themselves. But mm-hmm. I think what's going to happen is that, hopefully from reading this book, but I think the public is going to grow much more sophisticated and aware of how our information is being used or how it might be used. And these types of questions are going to come up. And the businesses that provide services to us are going to have to satisfy us with very explicit promises about how they use the information. And we're going to demand it of them. and we're gonna, and then we're gonna trust certain companies. So we'll give them lots and lots of information. They'll give us great service, hopefully, in return for it, customized service. And then other companies we won't trust.
Chris in Twin Lakes, in an email, says, "The Numerati do more good than harm. They help us detain the right people at the airports. I like getting a heads up on what books are coming out that I may like. I like the conveniences of new technology. I have nothing to hide from the Numerati." A reaction?
I think that's fine. I did not try to write an alarmist book.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to say this is a big change in history. There's this group that's rising, and it's a different way that we're being dealt with and understood. But there's definitely positive as well as negative. And if you keep your wits about you and ask the right questions, there's a lot to be gained from the Numerati and what they're doing. I think she's right.
Well, what questions do you have about the Numerati? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Stephen Baker. His book is The Numerati. Stephen Baker has written for Business Week for more than 20 years, and he is here to answer your questions about what the Numerati are doing with all of this personal information that we produce every day through technology, primarily through credit card purchases, cell phone calls, switching TV channels, clicking on internet websites. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Wall Street dealt another blow this week when Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy and Merrill Lynch acquired by Bank of America. Kathleen Dunn and her guest after 9 will discuss all the latest economic headlines. Ben Maron's after 4 o'clock, likely dealing with the Wall Street upheaval as well, coming up after 4. Right now, we're talking about the Numerati. And Stephen Baker, our guest, the author of The Numerati, is here to tell us who the Numerati are, what they're doing, find out what some of the inspiring things the Numerati are doing, some of the surprising things the Numerati are doing, and even some of the unsettling or scary things. Our next caller is Jonathan in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Good program. I actually missed the first part of it, unfortunately. I was wondering what Mr. Baker, if he had any coverage in his book about RFID chipping of consumer products.
I have a little bit about that. Yeah, I mean it's important in the grocery stores and the smart supermarkets that they're going to they'll have RFID chips, perhaps in our customer loyalty cards. And these chips have little radio signals, and they can inform who we are and what we're interested in, what our profile is, and then it could point us to certain items as we're going through the aisle that we might be interested in.
How's it going to do that?
Well, it has. You'll have the what they think is you're going to have a little computer on your grocery card, and those who want to participate swipe your customer loyalty card, and it lights up the computer, and then the computer guides you through the store and
go to aisle 4 for Cheerios or whatever
for that, yeah. And it'll give you discounts where other people might not have discounts. You can customize the discounts too.
Yeah, does that bother you, Jonathan?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that obviously has a lot of privacy implications, and I mean that just could be a small step into ultimately taking even more of our freedoms away. So it bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
One of the things that I want to clarify here is that when we talk about these people learning about us, they're learning about millions of people at the same time, and so it's actually in most of the cases it's machines that are processing this information, and it's not people. that are looking over your grocery list and tut-tutting and gossiping and raising eyebrows about it, if that's any comfort.
Like, oh, she shouldn't be buying that ice cream.
Right.
You do say, though, that the numerati have some sort of implications for an election year. How does it affect voters, are they?
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be very big in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
because Wisconsin is a important swing state. And so if one of the campaigns can find 3,000 swing voters in Kenosha or something like that, they're going to pounce on them. And traditionally, the politicians have looked at the classic race, gender, neighborhood, income, church-going, gun-toting type classifications that we're very familiar with. But now, certain consultancies of numerati are going through massive amounts of our data and trying to build behavioral profiles of us. And it has to do with our values. It doesn't have to do with necessarily our political parties. So they focus on people that are, and they create tribes. And so there are certain tribes of us. We don't know that we belong to these tribes, but we are in the database. There are tribes of us that are more interested in family-type topics, more interested in community values, more interested in what they call righteous values. And so certain of these tribes, when they do studies, come out to be swing voters. So Obama or McCain can hire one of these consultancies and say, I want to find, 3,000 community-minded swing voters in Madison. And then they can craft a campaign that targets these people's interest and kind of couches their platform in the ways that these people are interested, like community-minded. And then they can knock on doors or they can make phone calls and they can try and pry loose these swing votes. And they think that if they can get a few swing votes in swing states, it could swing the election. It won't make any difference in where I am in New York. They won't do any of this targeting in New York because it's not close enough.
Interesting, too. I'm not supposed to give away my politics, and I hope this doesn't give away my politics, but I'll receive phone calls and mailings from, RNC, DNC, candidates on all sides of the political aisle. Does this mean that the numerati are confused about my household?
I would say that it's not the numerati that are confused about your household. I'd say it's just traditional politicians are. But I don't really know.
You know what I mean, though? I mean, it's not
you're getting
as though,
everything.
Yeah, getting everything. It's not targeted.
Targeted, right. Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing about what they're trying to do is that you might be similar in almost every metric to your next-door neighbor, but because of the analysis they do of your data, they might put you in different tribes, and your neighbor might get a very different pitch than you do from the same candidate.
Mm-hmm. Next, we go to Ron in Lake Geneva. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a problem with this whole thing. I wonder how long this has been going on. And that poor woman who had the breast cancer and was denied treatment because of pre-existing conditions, I think about those people out there who are need like medical marijuana and they have dispensaries that people who need that, and they look up the people who are growing it by the fact that they're buying certain products that help enhance that in certain states where it's legal. So they're being scrutinized and being arrested by this group. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about the growers of medical marijuana or the alleged growers of medical marijuana, but the whole essence of what this thing is to discriminate. If you think about it, we say we don't like discrimination, but to discriminate is to say this person is this way and that person is that way, and discrimination is the essence of sort of customized service. So there's a upside and a downside to it. But as far as the pre-existing condition goes, I mean, I think that's for legislators are going to have to jump in on that one and make laws that protect people.
Do you see a lot of legislation resulting because of this trend?
Well, I think that as people learn more about this, it is going to raise awareness and that there is going to be public pressure on legislators to make laws to protect people. My concern is that the laws are going to be kind of clumsy, and that they're going to overprotect us in some areas and block out many of the useful things that the Numerati can do for us. I think what's going to happen is that the Numerati themselves, at places like Microsoft and IBM, are going to build tools for us to help us control our own personal data and figure out who we give it to, how that company uses it, and really keep track of it and keep tabs of it. And eventually, we might be able to sell it because it's got real value. So there should be markets for our data that we benefit from.
Yeah. We'll take another call. Actually, let me take this email. Kathy in Madison writes, "Greetings. For years, I have refused to sign those touchpad screens that the stores want me to sign when I use my credit card. I will and do sign a paper slip. Am I being overly paranoid, or is this a rational act on my part?" I'm not sure what difference it would make if...
I don't understand the difference it would make, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. All right, let's go to our next caller, Paul in Duluth. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is a great show. I'd like to ask your guest. I heard a little factoid not too long ago that said that studies show that more Republicans own dogs and more Democrats own cats.
I saw that too.
and the thing that the implication here is that I don't fit that profile at all, but as a dog owner and a renter, it's very hard to find a place to rent where you can have a dog, but you can find a place to rent that allows cats.
Yeah. It's funny, and I have a dog and a cat, so maybe the confusion of the political parties comes from that.
That's why they can't figure you out. No, you know, and there was a review of my book yesterday in the Wall Street Journal that pointed out that dog-cat dichotomy. But it's much more sophisticated than that. A dog or a cat is only a fraction of the profile that they're trying to build of you. It's not a determining thing that say, you know, dogs over here, cats over here, Republicans, Democrats. It's just one little signal that you might be one way or the other.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Paul. Dave in Genesee is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning to you and your guest.
Good morning.
Great show. One positive side to this, with all this information collection by the Numerati, comes a certain amount of helpful info. By mining all this massive data, facts become elucidated. You know, you might find out that buying people that bought pomegranate juice for the last 3 years have much less incidence of breast cancer or prostate cancer, and it could become very useful. You know, there's not all negative sides to all this collection, and it's going to come to light. You know, I think that people, the lady that with the breast cancer and the woman that didn't want to know about or have people find out about her, what she was buying at the grocery store. Well, if she's buying tobacco and she's buying red meat and that sort of thing, well, that increases your incidence of detrimental health. In truth, you need to pay for that. And, you know, to hide that from an insurance company, I think is... it'll change our ways, maybe.
Well, I certainly agree with you about the positive sides of this, and I do want to emphasize that one of the people I talked to in my book said to me, you know, this is such a fertile ground for medical research. He said that the next Jonas Salk is not going to be a doctor, it's going to be a mathematician, because it's going to be somebody that goes through and finds and solves problems. It might be HIV. It could be any of the scourges that we have. A lot of the secrets are in this data. And the Numerati, it's a great part of scientific research.
Thanks very much, Dave, for the call. Go next to Jim in Salt Lake City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey, thanks. I have a comment and a question. My comment is I also have one of those loyalty cards on my keychain. And I left my keys at the grocery store. And when I went back, I was surprised to find 100 other keys with my keys in this drawer. And I said, well, why don't you call all these loyalty customers? And they said, oh, we could, but we don't bother. So here's a benefit to us that they could have used to return these keys, but they don't. But my original question is, when I signed up for the loyalty card, I wasn't sure what they were going to do with the information. So I made up a fictitious person with a fictitious address. But I'm wondering, when I swipe my credit card or debit card, does it use that identity with the loyalty card, or do they use the application?
Boy, I don't know what they do with schemers like you.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds clever. That sounds pretty clever, Jim. So he has a fictitious grocery shopper.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Fred and Palmyra, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Your screener put it most succinctly, and I'll just try to say what he did. What might be the generational impact of the Numerati might have once they've profiled, like my generation, and what information they might then project onto your kids, since they usually reflect your ideals and values?
Can you figure that one out, Stephen Baker?
Boy, well, it's certainly a hot area of research in medicine, of course. They're looking for generational ties and genetic ties. But, boy, I didn't come across that. One thing I did come across is that an enormous, enormous amount of activity is in mining the social networks and the blogosphere, because all generations, but especially the young, are putting up their lives and the details of lives, sometimes the most intimate details of their lives, up on these networks. And so the Numerati are creating programs that can automatically read blog posts in a fraction of a second and determine whether the writer is a male or a female, approximately what age that person is, and whether the person has a positive or negative impression of the latest Microsoft ad or Barack Obama or Sarah Palin or whatever.
Yeah.
Really? And so this is and they're just starting, but eventually they're going to be able to understand not just whether it's thumbs up or thumbs down, they're going to be able to understand the written word, and then they're going to be able to mine all of the emails and look at the content of them, and that's going to give them a vast amount of data about what we're up to.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, and I want to thank you very much for being with us to talk with our listeners.
It's been a pleasure, Joy.
Stephen Baker, author of The Numerati. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. You can listen to all of our talk shows archived on our website as well, wpr.org. Let me take a couple of minutes to remind you that on Friday, we will be in Superior. The Joyride stops in Superior. We're hitting the campaign trail every Friday from this week through the end of October, visiting a different community every Friday to talk with local guests about local activities, local politics, national politics as well. We'll have a couple of guests on hand to review the news of the week from each location. This Friday we'll be in Superior at Barker's Island Inn, and I'd love to see you there. Look on our website for more information about all of our tour stops, wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.